Welcome to the world's greatest podcast, Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. I'm Seth Greenberg. Conference play is in full swing. Today, Dan and I will be looking at this weekend's results and looking ahead to a loaded week of games. Plus, Georgia head coach Tom Crean joins us ahead of his huge game against the Kentucky Wildcats. Before we get started, I want to remind you to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you're listening. It really helps us. And it helps other people find the world's greatest podcast, better known as Courtside. Also, tell a friend about the world's greatest podcast. We bring it every single week. We take no plays off. We take no days off. This is real talk. This is coach to coach. This is the way it really is. This is it. I think it's like this. This is real straight talk. Courtside, the world's greatest podcast. And finally, check out the Woj Pod. You know, last week we talked to the great Jeff Van Gundy about David Stern's legacy. If you like that conversation, Woj and Jalen Rose go even deeper into the life of the late NBA commissioner. You can get the Woj Pod wherever you're listening to this podcast.
For the win! Yes! Yes!
At the buzzer, McCord on its way!
Oh, oh, oh my goodness! Goodness!
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. Basically, it is not the definitive podcast on basketball. It is the world's greatest podcast on anything, life, basketball, and anything else you would like to know about. But Dan, I got a couple things that are kind of taking me off a little bit. You know, and so I'm going to vent here a little bit. First and foremost, all this talk about upsets. Half of these games aren't upsets. When Florida State goes into Louisville, a team I question how tough they are right now in this moment in time. Florida State, the Rodney Dangerfield College basketball, their length, their athleticism, the number of guys that can drop 25 on you in a given day, that's not an upset. Villanova losing at Marquette. Marquette was favored in that game. That's not an upset. Memphis and Georgia. Georgia going into Memphis, and we're going to talk to Tom Crean later. Let's face it, no DJ Jeffries. Memphis is a young basketball team. Georgia has a guy that's going to be 1, 2, 3 in the draft. That's not an upset. About the only game that was a real upset to me this weekend was maybe Wisconsin-Ohio State. You know, Wisconsin has struggled this season. So to me, the whole thing about, look, you're in league play. There's a more level playing field. There's no defining team. There's no defining player. So, like, we're losing our minds. Evansville beating Kentucky is an upset.
Yes.
Even if Austin, all right, those are the outliers. These other games aren't upsets. Now I'm going to tell you why we have even a more level playing field. I'm going to give you three numbers. 64, 79, 86. That's the number of underclassmen that put their names in the draft and stayed in the last 3 years. 64. 3 years ago, 79, 2 years ago, and 86. Now, the last time I checked, only 60 guys are drafted. The last time I checked, there are about 15 to 20 from overseas. The last time I checked, there are upperclassmen and seniors. So someone is telling these guys, back in the day, if a guy wasn't promised a first round or a lottery, he was coming back to college. How different would Syracuse be with O'Shea Brissett and Tyus Battle? How different would even a West Virginia team who rebounds in every missed shot would be without Saj Konate? So, like, you have these guys that are getting advice to go out that aren't even getting drafted, all right, that have basically have nowhere to go. And, oh, they're going to say, well, they're making money. Well, some of them are making money. Some of them aren't making money. Some are taking pay cuts. Let's be honest with it. So, like, why do we have a more level playing field? Because we have a bunch of dudes that went out that probably weren't drafted, that are probably not making very much money, and instead of having that college experience and also being on teams that could be a little bit better competing for NCAA tournament bids, Sweet 16 bids, Final Four bids. So there's a reason behind it. But this upset thing, I'm tired. When you get in league play, man, I don't want to hear about the upsets.
Brissett is in the NBA. Didn't get drafted, but he's in the NBA. Battle is not. What is making money? Like, I remember telling DJ White in 2008, he was player of the year in the Big Ten at Indiana. And I remember telling him, you know, even when you go to the NBA, this is what people don't understand. Even when you go to the NBA, unless you're on one of the two or three teams, you're with LeBron or something, you're not on national TV nearly as much as you are when you're at Indiana. You know, and you're not seen nearly as much. And I didn't say that to not make him go to the NBA. I just simply, we were talking, and it's interesting to me because what is making money? You know, is making money $1,000 playing somewhere overseas, $1,000 a month is, you know, Robbie Hummel has some great, and everybody that plays overseas has some great stories of how, man, when I was at Purdue and I got hurt, or after a game, man, I had trainers wrapping my knees. I had all this kind of stuff. He goes, when I'm playing in Russia, they're like, yeah, the ice machine's down the hall, man. You're good. You know, I mean, it's just, I've not yet figured out two things in college basketball, Seth. And I'm wrong and everybody can criticize me. I've not figured yet out why it's such a bad experience, number one, to play in college basketball. I've not understood that. And the second thing I understood, it's completely separate, is why it's so bad to sit out a year when you transfer. Like every guy I've ever coached said it was the greatest year of their life. I wanted a red shirt when I was at Indiana just because I didn't want to be yelled at for a minute, and I wanted to kind of hang out and be a, you know, get stronger, bigger, all that kind of stuff. Those two things amaze me. Like people act like playing people always say like you and me, Billis, Fran, you know, LaFonso, they say, wow, you guys earn your money on the backs of these college basketball players. Man, I don't know about you, but I had a blast playing college basketball. I didn't care who made the money. It was fun. I don't understand that. Anyway, that's different than what you're saying. I know, but everybody's in such a hurry to do what? What are you in a hurry to leave college for? Like, I get it. Anthony Edwards, we're going to have Tom Crean on, as you mentioned, is going to be a top five pick. All right. Leave college because it's, you know,
it's generational money.
Yeah. And it's the NBA, and you know, you're going to be in the NBA, and that's every kid's dream. Hell, I wanted to be the next Bob Love and Jerry Sloan of the Chicago Bulls, man. That's what I wanted to be. So I get it. But when somebody sits there from the NBA and tells you, no, this is not going to happen for you, and yet you still decide to do it, that's just dumb.
Because you're seeking out someone to tell you what you want to hear.
That's all you're doing.
Eventually, one of these guys is seeking out someone. Well, you're going to be the guy that makes it. You're going to be the undrafted guy. You're going to be this. You're going to be that. And you might be, and that's great. And look, that's terrific. But there's also a value to having someone market you for a year. There's also a value today, and I don't want to get into this because we're going to get off mark, but of college players, athletes never had it better. Cost of
never.
The meal situation, the way they travel.
Seth, can I stop you right there? People say, well, maybe they don't want to go to class. Guess what? You really don't have to go to class. You can take classes online. Well, they don't want to get up in the morning and trudge across class. Well, you don't have to. Hell, you literally don't have to go to class. You literally can do all of your class in the morning, whenever you want, online, and be a all around the clock basketball player or partier or whatever you are in college. You said it. It's never been better, and I don't understand it, my friend.
So now we're in league play. And league play, there's even a more level playing field. That there is a finer line because of, and I'm not going to use the word parity, because there are more teams that have a chance to win on any given night. Let's put it that way, within your league, which there should be. When you get in league play, there should be some commonality within the league, and there should be a finer line within the league. So this past weekend, what was your take on, you've got Ohio State, Maryland. What is your take on Ohio State in this moment in time? Not having Young, is that as big a deal as maybe people didn't realize? Like, they've lost two games. They didn't have Dwayne Washington, didn't have Young. One's a front court player, one's a big time jump shooter. What's your take on, like, Ohio State in this moment in time, a team we thought 2 weeks ago was the best team in the country?
I'll give you my take on Ohio State, but it involves Wisconsin. I thought Wisconsin was the worst Wisconsin team I've seen since 1997 or 95, going backwards to 1981 when I came into the Big Ten. I thought it was historically bad. And you mentioned league play, Seth. I'm going to tell you what I think about Wisconsin, but, or excuse me, Ohio State. But before I do, I got to tell you, league plays tough, and Wisconsin has all of a sudden figured some things out within their own team. They went to Tennessee, beat a mediocre, but still at Tennessee by 20, then beat Ohio State. I think Ohio State is reeling in a lot of areas. I obviously my son's there. He asked me what I think. I'll tell you exactly what I told him. I think it's a bad passing team. I think it's a team that's very careless with the basketball. The turnovers come in bunches. The turnovers come at a time when you either can take the game from a 5-point lead to a 12-point lead, and when you don't do that, that causes problems. They're not a good passing team. Losing Washington and Young might be the two most important people on the team other than Caleb Wesson. That hasn't been good. The freshman kid Carton lost confidence. I saw it. I know what it looks like. I saw it right in the middle of the West Virginia game where he turned down a shot. This is a cocky kid. This is a kid that thinks of himself as the next Isaiah Thomas, the good Isaiah Thomas, going backwards to the Detroit Pistons. Seth, I think, you know, at Washington not being in the West Virginia game was huge. Losing Young, that's huge. But the truth of the matter is, this is a team that doesn't value the ball. And when you don't value the ball against the teams in the Big Ten, they do value the ball. Wisconsin, under this regime with Greg Gard, Michigan, when you had John Beilein and Tom Izzo, has always had high regard for the ball. You give up possessions, they don't, you're going to lose. And that's exactly what happened. I'm anxious to see tonight because I think Maryland is really good. Maryland had trouble at times in the last few years giving up the ball. I'm anxious to see what happens tonight.
Yeah, my thing with Maryland is I agree that they're taking much better care of the basketball. Yes. I mean, just the numbers, like it's like about 16% of their possessions. Ohio State, about 20% of their possessions, they turn it over, which is a crazy number to me. I mean, just, you know, especially because they're playing basically three what I call perimeter players at all time. Maryland's, my biggest concern is, look, they beat Indiana and they shot 39% from the field.
Yeah.
Now think about that. You win a game, you shot 39% from the field. Now they get extra possessions on the glass. I do like when they play Stick Smith at the five. This will be an interesting matchup. Caleb Wesson, Stick Smith. That'll be a game kind of within the game because Smith can go on the floor and defend. I'm going to give you another team in the Big Ten. We're just going to jump around a little bit. The joy in the game is back at Michigan State. And what I mean by that is, when I talked to Tom about two, three weeks ago, right after finals, he said that Cassius came into the gym with a genuine smile on his face. And when he smiled, it enabled everyone else to smile. It enabled Tom to get back to coaching his team. It enabled those other guys maybe to take a deep breath and just have Cassius back as their teammate. And, you know, all teams are quote unquote families. Michigan State is a very tight group. I think they all share in, like any team would share in his pain, but you could see the joy in playing the game and you could see the enjoyment, in that Michigan game. Yeah, shots went in, but the energy and the body language and the enthusiasm and the passion and the fun, to me, it started probably about 2 weeks ago. It's starting to crescendo with obviously the Illinois and the Michigan game. Is it as evident to you as it is to me that you can see the joy and the fun back in the game for those guys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think Cassius Winston has that game 2 weeks ago. And Michigan State seemed, what's the right word? Stale, I guess is what it is. Now, you know what, Seth? Maybe it was a big rivalry, but when you told me, I think on last week's podcast that, you know, that was how Tom described Cassius, I'm not surprised at what happened because Michigan State's really good. And when Cassius Winston plays like that, they're as good as anybody if they can shoot it. I saw it, Seth. And I saw it clearly. I think that, you know, we all did. We're going to jump around. So let me jump around at you. We always say no great teams, no great teams this year. I've been the leader of the movement, but I'm starting to think to myself, wait a second here. What's the definition of a good team? And one of the things that defines a good team is winning a ton of games, or a great team is winning a ton of games. I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I know Wendell Moore is out, but Duke went down to Miami, won by 30 some. Are we going to start to see a week from now? Are we going to say, wait a second, Duke might just be a great team?
Oh, no, I agree with you. And Duke's schedule sets up where they can get a little bit of momentum. I mean,
right?
If you look at their schedule right now, the schedule is very favorable. Look, what do you need to have a good team? You need to have a great point guard, all right, who can defend the ball and keep the ball out of the lane. They have that check. Do you need a front court guy that can protect the rim, rebound the basketball, and score? They got that in Vernon Carey. You need a blend between youthful exuberance and experience. They got guys like Jack White that can come off the bench. Javon Delaurier that can come off the bench. Alex O'Connell, Goldwire, who really can defend. And then you need guys that are going to step up and start to emerge. Matthew Hurt, the last four games, 14 points a game, shooting like 63%, shooting a three. And Coach K's teams have always been better when he's had a stretch four. The D is back in Duke. These guys are defending. They were Ook. In and out of Ook for a while. That's Duke without the D. But now they're back to kind of getting in passing lanes because you can, when you have a guy who can guard the ball and keep it out of lane, you can get in passing lanes. So I agree with that. I think Duke is, a bad performance against Stephen F. Austin. And Stephen F. Austin was the reason they had a bad performance because they basically physically went after them, didn't back down, kept it on the side, denied, was physical, tough, attacked you off the bounce. If you're going to beat Duke, you got to drive them. Running offense against Duke is difficult. Driving them is not as difficult if you move them and then drive them. I think Duke has been, to me, big picture, the most impressive team and maybe a team that has even the most room for growth moving forward.
Beat Kansas, beat Georgetown, went into Michigan State and won, went into Virginia Tech and won. Last five games, no one scored over 63 points against Duke. Now they got, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, at Clemson. So two of the next three on the road against teams they should beat, setting up pretty nice homestand, starting with Louisville, then Miami, then Pittsburgh. So, I agree. We're going to sit here and everybody, the narrative on college basketball, because there's so much going on, changes. And one of the narratives about not a great team, that may be changing here in a little bit when Duke gets to be about 22-1. I don't know about you, but that screams a little greatness to me. It really does. Who's the best league right now, Seth? Big Ten? Big East guys telling me it's the Big East.
The Big East, top to bottom, is the best league. This is no bottom. I mean, Providence now is kind of starting to play again.
Yeah.
This is a Providence team that is athletic, does have size, does have good guards. So top to bottom, I'm not sure there's a bottom of the Big East. Now, in terms of the number of teams that potentially are second weekend Final Four potential, I think it's the Big Ten. And after that, I tell you, I don't know where I would fit the ACC. All right. Because look, I look at the ACC and yeah, Duke is an elite team. They are really, really good. I think Florida State, the Rodney Dangerfield of college basketball, is a second weekend elite team. The number of guys who can score it, the length, the depth, they turn you over. The Patrick Williams could kill you one night. MJ Walker could be the next guy. Trent Forrest could be the next night. Devin Vassell makes every shot. Louisville, to me, there's something missing. And it's not just they need to get consistent point guard play. Like it's like Chris Mack's teams have an edge. He played with an edge as a player. When you looked at the Xavier teams, they had an edge. I don't see the edge in this Louisville team. And they need someone else. Like Jordan Warren had a big game the other day, but then, they didn't have someone step up beside him. After that, let me ask you, are you sold on a Virginia? And no. Since State has a chance, they need to get CJ Bryce back. I mean, who else jumps out of you and goes, oof, I wouldn't want to play them.
Seth, I tell you this, in the ACC, I tell you a team that can beat somebody. And I told Mike Bray this weekend. I go, I can see your team getting hot over a couple week period.
Ooh, I agree. Wednesday. Yes. Yeah, They're shooting now.
I watched, I think most people, Syracuse and Notre Dame Saturday was the most fun game I may have done in my 9 years here, man. That was back and forth. Dudes were making jump shots. And big time ones. And Mike and I had a conversation in the locker room beforehand. He asked me what I thought. And I said, look, the way college basketball is and the way your guys can shoot the ball, I wouldn't be surprised if he went on a 2-week, you know, win 5 out of 6, something like, you know what I mean? I mean, something like that, yeah, where now all of a sudden you jump into the national consciousness. I don't know that Syracuse can do it. They had a great night that night, and Joe Girard is a guy that when challenged, jumps up and plays.
They have no one at the rim.
No, that's a problem. That's what I was going to say. They just don't seem like they have enough. And it, look, Seth, if you're going to put together an All-American team, Mooney from Notre Dame has got to be on this thing, because when you watch, if you're going to say, all right, list the most valuable player to his team in each league, I'm not so sure. Like, I know Vernon Carey is really valuable to Duke. I get it. But I'm not sure there's any, you take John Mooney off of Notre Dame, I'm not sure they can beat the three of us. I mean, he's that good. You know,
I agree with you. I have Notre Dame, at NC State, and So we're going to do a little special thing on Mooney. Hopefully get a chance to have him show us his rebounding technique. But I started watching tape just on his rebounds. I literally just clipped off about 100 of his rebounds. I'll tell you what he does. This is something that, like, we hear it all the time. He pursues every rebound, like every rebound. If he's at the foul line, he's going after it. If he's in a wing, he's going after it. If he's in traffic, he's coming up with it. If it's below the rim, the dude goes after every single rebound. And then on top of that, they're shooting, like the last 5 games, shooting over 40 from the three. Dane Goodwin's getting better. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you that. I've really been impressed with the two guys. TJ Gibbs is starting to play like a senior, which is really important. Your seniors have to play like seniors. And Prentice Hubb, even though sometimes I question, you know, why is he shooting that? But, you know, he played with no confidence a year ago. He's starting to play with a confidence that is really, really important to this team. So I agree with you. I think Notre Dame is really has a chance to take a step forward. And this is a big game for NC State coming off the loss at Clemson. No C.J. Bryce, didn't turn you, only had 3 steals. They can't win up with only 3 steals. And Markel Johnson, Markel Johnson's supposed to be that guy. Well, he's got to start, you know, talk about seniors. He's got to start playing like that guy. Cause you know what? He didn't play like that guy in the Clemson game. He's loose with the ball. His decision making is not good. This will be a really good game. I'm excited, got the old 6 o'clock flight to Raleigh tomorrow morning. And I'm excited to call that game and to be at that game. I think it has a chance to be a really good one.
Let me ask you about another team, a team on the other end of things at Michigan State. Michigan struggled a little bit here, Seth. You mentioned Ohio State, no question. Well, you know what? Michigan, they were terrific. We know this to start the season. They went in back and tough game at Louisville. I don't know how you're going to win that game, and they get pounded there a little bit. How good do you think Michigan is ultimately as we move through the season?
I think they're going to be fine. I think Livers, they need him back. They need his shot making. Teske, like, he's really good. Like, he's really good. I mean, he scores around the basket. He's patient, which is a great thing for post players. I think they'll be fine. I know everyone loves Xavier Simpson and he's very good. I'm not sure he's a Final Four point guard. I think he can.
He's already been one. Championship game.
There's something about his game that I'm not totally sold on with this team. He had other dudes around him too.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. So like, if they're like, how good is Kansas? Kansas, you know, last game, West Virginia is so hard to play against. Even last night, the other night, I mean, their ability to rebound, they just absolutely go into Oklahoma State and destroy them. The Big 12, I'm going to just give it. I think it's a 4-team race. And if they don't sleep on the Red Raiders.
Oh boy.
Because Texas Tech is starting to play. Jamias Ramsey is a guy no one's talking about. We are, you know, obviously he's going to be on our air. They play Baylor today, which is obviously Tuesday. You know, they might have already played him if you're listening to this on Wednesday or Thursday, but that is a big time game. But West Virginia, Kansas, Baylor, Texas Tech. Those four teams you do not want to see in your bracket in the NCAA tournament, because all four of those teams are teams you do not want to play against. They're hard to prepare for. It's hard to simulate how they play, and they are hard to beat. Big 12, those four, the top of the Big 12, those four teams as the top of a league are going to be as good as any.
All right, let's play a little game. You ready?
Do I have a choice?
Nope. We're going to play where does one loss go? How far does one loss go? I'm going to give you the one loss teams currently in college basketball. One loss, not two losses, just one loss. And you give me a quick, how deep do they go in the tournament? You ready?
You got it.
13-1, Wichita State.
Second weekend. I like their guard. They're not great, but I think they're, I like their, you know, play angry, all that jazz. They're not overly talented, but they are really tough and I like their guard play.
13-1, Duke Blue Devils.
They could be a national champion.
16-1, the Liberty Flames.
Don't get out of the first weekend. They're very good. Caleb Helmsley is really, really good. They, you know, obviously the pack line owning tempo. The big kid they have, James, is very good. But I don't think they get out of the first weekend. I didn't like the way they played against LSU.
Baylor Bears, 11-1.
Second weekend. I love Baylor. I love their guard play. I love their toughness. Freddie Gillespie just pursues, double guy pursues the ball off the backboard. Vital pursues the ball off the backboard. They have a toughness. If Tristan Clark ever comes around, I think they're really, really good.
14-1, number six in the country, the Butler Bulldogs.
I think this is old school Butler. I think they're a second weekend team. I got to watch them a little more. They could even be better than that. But I mean, Kamar Baldwin's got his swag back a little bit. I love Thompson. I love their way, you know, Durbin makes shots. I think their front court guys are physical. I think they're really good.
15-0, San Diego State Aztecs.
I think they're really good. And they're playing. I think the other thing people don't understand about San Diego State, they're old. You know, they got the Fagans kid's a transfer from Santa Clara. They got Malachi Flynn, who's a transfer from Washington State, who's older. Yanni Wetzel played at Vandy. They've got legitimate depth. They're tough as could be. They could be a second weekend team. I'm not sure they're an Elite Eight team, but I think they're a second weekend team.
Arkansas Razorbacks, 12-1.
Yeah. And a win at Indiana, which is a good win.
Mm-hmm.
Look, their style of play, they're playing four guards and they are relentless, relentless defensively. And he gives them a ton of freedom offensively. I've got to see him beat another good team though. The Western Kentucky loss on the road was kind of an interesting loss to me. I've got to see him beat more good teams to see they're going to get into the second weekend. But I do think we should have Eric Musselman and his wife Danielle on together in the podcast, because what they're doing in Fayetteville at Arkansas, in terms of creating an energy and a synergy and an ownership and their teamwork, I think is a great story for all coaches, in terms of building a program.
All right. The Fighting Bruce Pearls of Auburn, 13-0, Seth.
Yeah, they're tough, man. They got a great backcourt. Javon McCormick and Shamir Dowdy are really good. Kuro is really good. My concern is this, and I'm going to throw this back at you. Can you be an Elite Eight team and shoot 30% from the three-point line?
Man, do you open yourself up to getting beat against teams that aren't as good as you, right? I mean, don't you? I mean,
there's a ton of teams. By the way, if you go to the SEC, look at turnover margin, assist to turnovers, and look at three-point shooting, and there are some head-scratchers, I'm just telling you. And it's across the country. I just happened to do the SEC the other day because I was bored. So I love how hard they play. I think they out-tough you. I think they rebound. I think they defend. I think they're a team you don't like to play against. I think Auburn's a second weekend team. I think they have an arrogance and an expectation.
The Bulldogs of Gonzaga. There's our final team, Seth Greenberg.
Yeah, I think they're a Final Four team.
Yeah.
I really think they are. I think that the league play and look, they're going to play close games and they're the red out, the white out, the blue out, the green out. I think they're just getting through, they're getting through their league play at BYU, at St. Mary's. Those are the ones where they'll raise their temperature and then you'll see how good they are again.
Well, you know what I'm excited about? You know what I'm not excited, but you know what's kind of fun for me to watch is what Stanford's doing at 12-2. They're not a one loss team, so I didn't include them in here, but I love what they're doing, Seth. I think I like Jared Haas.
They turn it over so much. Goodness, they throw the thing away.
I know, but they win. I'll tell you who doesn't. Let me go back to Notre Dame real quick. And you're going to see this when you get ready for the game. Damn, their assist to turnovers of their good players.
Crazy
is
good. It's unbelievable. That, yeah. They don't foul. They don't turn it over and they make the next pass. It's unbelievable.
This is, you know, like Bo Ryan, John Beilein type stuff. They don't throw it. Game's going to last if they play against somebody else that doesn't foul. Game might last an hour and a half. You'll be in and you'll be out. Catch a flight.
Yeah. A lot of fill for the boys in the studio. Don't be pontificating.
Hey, we'll be back. We got Tom Crean coming up on the other side of the break. You won't want to miss it.
We have a message from our good friends at Vivid Seats. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band or being in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program, you can attend the concert or show of your choice and earn credit towards your next live event. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all live events. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back. All you need to do is use the Vivid Seats app to purchase tickets and start earning today. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Fans are automatically enrolled in Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program. And when you make your next purchase, enter promo ESPN25 for a 10% off your next order. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program today. And don't forget to use the promo code ESPN25. For 10% off your next order, make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event.
Hey, let's welcome in the coach of the Georgia Bulldogs. The great Tom Crean joins. Coach, congratulations. Big win at Memphis. Hey, let's get right into this. I asked you this on my radio show. I'm going to ask you here. You took over Indiana, different deal. You take over Georgia. Talk about the differences coming to Georgia as opposed to coming to Indiana.
Well, I mean, there's no comparison to what we walked into at Indiana, as you know, from what you had to deal with there too. And that just took, it was a complete changeover. I mean, when you're dealing with as many walk-ons as you are scholarship guys and trying guys out during the year, even in the month of February of the season, that's a whole different deal. This was a bunch of really good guys, that wanted to work hard. And we had six seniors in the program, at that time when we got in here and really only lost one guy. And I didn't want to lose him, but he wanted to get back closer to home in New York. But it really wasn't, it was a really good group and Mark Fox had recruited good people and we had some structure and they bought into the work and they bought in. We just weren't as good when it came to making shots and taking care of the ball and some of those type of things, but we were able to start to get things structured with guys that knew how to play college basketball and had been in some pretty tough situations and playing games and being in this league.
Tom, this is your third rebuild though. I mean, you think about it, you had to rebuild Marquette. Obviously Indiana was a different deal. Now you come into Georgia. Marquette and Indiana are quote unquote basketball schools. Georgia perceived as obviously a great football school. Is your approach any different?
Well, I think, you know what? I think after going through it, you just realize, I don't think you get away from what you tried to do to make those other ones successful. Even though when you walk in, it's a different part of the country, obviously. And it's a different environment because there is so much success in football, and they didn't have the tradition. Marquette had really great tradition. Obviously, Indiana has great tradition. So no matter how you're recruiting and people know of the programs. They know of the schools. They know of the basketball part of the schools. This one was a little bit different. And I think you try to play on to the passion of what there is for the other sports. especially with football. And then I think you keep looking for all the positives that make it such a great place. And then because you've won other places, because you've built at other places, you feel like you're going to be able to do it here too. And you just try to get that across to people that it's going to be the same type of blueprint, player development, you know, get skilled, get better, grow into the program. And then you try to sell what you did. We definitely tried to sell what we did with other teams and other players. And so it's a different approach, but it's also kind of the same blueprint of how do we build this the way that is going to give us some sustainability.
Did a year at ESPN, did that help you at all? Did you take anything from that?
I think so. Oh, absolutely. I think I got a ton in the way of small group leadership. I got a ton in the way of every job matters to the nth degree. And it just showed again that you can't have success without everybody doing their job, without everybody knowing their role, wanting to be really great at it, and then working together. And I think some of the ways that, like, I only had the same play-by-play man twice. I think I had Boog Shambi twice. Other than that, it was somebody different. When you do the Remy games where you don't have your producer there with you and they're back in Bristol, and now you're just dealing with somebody maybe you've met, maybe you haven't met, but you're just dealing with them over the phone or you're dealing with them over a headset. It's that trust that goes into it. It's seeing how everybody operates, whether you're running a camera, whether you're running something else, technically, whatever it is, everybody wants to be the best at what they do. And I think it just reminds you that when you're building a program, you can't have any weak links, and you've got to do everything you can do every day to help them understand how to not be a weak link, how important it is in this world, because if you're going to be successful, you want to be great at what you do. And I think ESPN had a lot. And I just loved being in the environment. I love being in the environment of other basketball people, other sports people, people that knew leadership. I mean, it's just fantastic. And the food inside that cafeteria was unbelievable. And I miss that to this day.
Oh, yeah, they said you were big on the nachos for some reason. I don't understand that.
Are the nachos that good? Yeah, I was big on the nachos. I was big, but I was careful with that now because you can't eat too heavy now when you're sitting there doing those wraps. You can't do that. So I would eat a little lighter then, maybe a little late, a little heavier later.
Yeah, especially with Lindley in your ear, it kind of wears you out. Right? We've all been there. There's no doubt about it.
Your
team this year, all right, obviously year two, you always want to take a step forward. Your team this year, you get obviously Anthony Edwards, but the size of your class, you know, a lot of times you bring in a big class, you want to develop the class. Not everyone has the same role. Not everyone's going to have the same opportunity. How is it bringing in such a big class and basically making sure that everyone feels like they're one moving forward, but two, part of the solution?
Oh, it's hard. It's hard, Seth. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, 10 new players, 9 freshmen is really, really hard. And I really hope we don't have to do that part of it again. It's just the way that it worked out this year. And fortunately, we got Donnell Gresham from Northeastern as a grad transfer, which has just been huge in this. But as you guys know, I mean, in this day and age, more than ever, it's about immediate success, immediate gratification. People go from playing to play and playing a couple games a day in the summer to now you really have to compete to win. And like winning matters, and how you win and how you prepare and how you play possession by possession and the accountability that goes into it. It's hard. I mean, so yeah, this conversation, we got a guy on our staff that has been in the NBA the last 10 years, and we're talking about different players coming into the teams. And no matter what player, no matter what year they came into pro basketball, they had already been through college at some point, right? Like whether it was 1 year, 2 year, 3 years, whatever it is. When you get a guy, so some of the bad habits are already gone. Some of the way that you have to be a teammate is already ingrained in them. Maybe not all the way, obviously, but it's there. When you get them in college, you're getting all those habits, and you've got to do everything you can do every day to help them to understand the right habits. And it takes time, especially when you've got guys that have had a lot of success in their minds over a period of time. And now it's got to translate into how are we going to win games, especially in a league like this.
Coach Anthony Edwards, very good. Everybody saw him in Maui. His development, from when he got to you to where he is now? And where do you see the future for that kid?
I think his future is incredible. I mean, it really is, because I think he's going to be, as he continues to figure this out, he can be an elite, elite defender. You know, with that size, body, strength, anticipation, awareness, he leads us in deflections, and he's not even scratching the surface on how good he can be activity-wise, you know, with his hands. But he's got really good alertness on the ball. He's got to get much better awareness off the ball. But he's really made a lot of strides. He's made a lot of strides in his shot. He's made a lot of strides. He's still not close to being ready to shoot the way that he needs to be. He still settles too much and still looks for the dribble rather than the attacking drive, right? And we're trying to get him to continue to break. Don't just dribble the ball when you get it, because your first step is so powerful. And every time you just take a dribble, it negates what you can do next. And we're trying to get him to see, play the game with his eyes up more, not predetermine, you know, what's there, and just kind of play off the read of the game. But he's made a ton of strides. He's a very, very good worker. There's been many different times now this season where the game has ended and all of a sudden you see him or you hear that he's in the gym after the game shooting the ball. Last week against Austin Peay, he didn't have a very good game, but he passed the ball extremely well. You know, I see him coming out of there 2 hours after the game had ended. And those are the kind of things. He's got a drive, which I think is really, really important. But he just got to continue to learn, and he's got to continue to put himself in situations where he's not settling.
You know, that SMU game, everyone wants to talk about the Memphis game, but the SMU game where you guys kind of grinded and grinded and grinded, and then, you know, in the end, Wheeler makes back-to-back big-time plays in that game. End of the game, you put it in his hands. He makes the play. A guy like Edwards is going to be a lottery pick, could be 1, 2, 3, whatever he's going to be. How does he handle that? And then how did that game help your team beat a Memphis in a close game?
Well, it never came up, in all honesty, because he was in the play. He was in the corner.
Right.
And he does a really good job. You know, one thing he's doing a much better job of is moving without the ball. And he's learning. And he's never really had to do that, like, in his life. You know, it's come down, handle it, play in the slots, play at the top of the key. It's not there, pass it, wait to get it back. You know, that's not basketball. You know, not as you move up the level. So he was in the play, never came up. And you know what? I never thought twice about it, because it's not like I'm not coaching that way. I'm coaching right to win the game, you know, not really worry about what somebody thinks of that play. And in Sevier's case, we put two shooters in the corners so that if there was any help, we've got the back cut. If there's any help, we've got the kick. And he just made a great read and got to the rim, because he's such a good layup maker. But I think this is a great example. He likes playing with Sevier so much, and they have such a good camaraderie and synergy on the floor that, again, I don't think it came up with anybody. And that's a good thing. But I think a lot of times in the game, you just look at it. You want to look at matchups, but it's more importantly, you know, who's going to make the best play at the end of the game in that decision, in that situation, not a predetermined play, but the best play. And that's how I want to continue to roll with it.
Hey, Coach, what are your thoughts to this point on the SEC, where they're at, where the league's at?
You know, I'm going to see a lot more of it as we go. Like I study the stats and I haven't seen everybody play a ton. I think the league, it definitely continues to get older. I think Florida has figured it out, and that's always going to take time. Florida's a great example of where college basketball is. You know, you've got young guys, you've got some guys that had some moderate level of success a year ago, and you bring in a great player like Kerry Blackshear, right? Well, all of a sudden, everybody thinks it's going to be about them, right? Just like they're on every other team. And then when teams start to figure out that it becomes about the whole, and now everybody else can flourish in it, you know, because the ball's moving, because the cutting's there, because they're connected on defense. Now all of a sudden you're a lot better team. And I think that's what Florida's done. Auburn has definitely got that going, you know, with the fearlessness that they shoot the ball with, the activity that they pressure you with. I think the league is good. I'm not surprised at all with what Arkansas is doing. I think he's an excellent coach. He got a lot of really good guards back in that program, and that knew how to shoot, that knew how to play. Mike Anderson is excellent in a sense. I don't think he gets nearly enough credit for how well his teams move without the ball, you know, how well his teams cut and play. And he gets a lot of attention because of their defensive pressure, but maybe not as much because of the way those guys move without the ball. They're doing a fantastic job of that. So I think the league is really in a strong uptick, and there's some experience in it. People are playing to their strengths. And I think when you look around, this is one of the better leagues for shooting the basketball right now.
What do you see in Kentucky? What's your major concerns?
Well, we haven't seen anyone. And Dayton is really good. And Michigan State is really physical. But the physicality and the aggressiveness speed of Kentucky is different than anything we've seen at this point. Nick Richards is playing at a high level. They're going to get 2 and 3 people on the glass every time. And they're very, very comfortable hitting you first. And which some guys aren't, right? Some guys aren't there. Nick Richards just seeks out the contact. But the way that Maxey and Quickley are so quick with the ball, ready to shoot the ball, the explosiveness that they play with, Aston Hagans is doing as good a job as anybody I've seen this year at creating for his teammates. He creates the lobs, he creates the driving kicks. And outside of that physicality and aggressiveness, Seth, I think the biggest thing is the free throw shooting. They've made 100, or they've shot 100 more free throws than their opponent. And as both of you know, when you're making more free throws than your opponent is shooting, you're going to be really good. I think they've made almost 40 more free throws than their opponent. And the kicker is they're shooting 80% from the line. And so they're really, really driving the ball. They're like professional foul drivers right now. They're doing a great job of driving into bodies, creating the contact, getting to the line, making it pay, or making you pay because you fouled them. And that's the stuff that concerns me the most. We can't let that happen.
You had a chance. You talked about your experience at ESPN. You get to see the broader sense of college basketball. A lot of people talk negative, positive, whatever. What's your sense of college basketball and where it's at?
I think it's up to everybody. You know, when you're coaching your team, I think, well, in a nutshell, I think whatever happens over the next year to year and a half now with whatever comes out from everything that happened with the investigation, that's going to tell a lot. It really is. It's going to tell an awful lot. And what does come from it? Because some has come, not as much. Obviously, there's things pending out there. What is that going to look like? But I think the more that it changes and the more things come with the image and likeness and the more that the rules change, the more you got to stay absolutely true to finding guys that can compete, that have some skill, especially with the shooting, that are going to be able to turn in to really good teammates, right? And obviously knowing when they come in, they may not have all those things, but that you can develop it, because I think you can get so caught up in what is going on with college basketball or what people think about it, that you can just totally fall in love with everything that doesn't matter. The athleticism matters, but skill matters. Length and talent matters, but character and work ethic and competitiveness matter. And getting guys that want to, that understand that going to school, that the academic part of this is really, really important, not the entitlement of being not just a college basketball player, but somebody that really wants to get the most experience from college. And I think that's the only way you can do it, because if you look at all the big picture stuff so much as a coach or inside of a program, you're going to lose sight of the details. And at the end of the day, you got to be responsible for the details when you're inside of the program. But I still go back. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how it all plays out from all the information, from everything that's been said and done. How does that play out and where does that lead us?
Tom, you think the line moving back has impacted the game? Because, I mean, 3-point shooting is down, free throws. I mean, people are shrinking the court. That certain guys you just don't even have to guard. How long do you think it'll take for teams to adjust, for players to adjust? It seems like more guys are shooting a three that were average 3-point shooters a year ago. Now that line moves back a little bit. They're not good 3-point shooters. What's your take on the line moving back? Do you think in the end it will help the game?
I think it'll help the game. You know, one thing that I was surprised, that I didn't go that many different places to see practices when I was out that year. But in seeing, you know, doing the different games and things like that, you know, we've had the NBA line down. We had the NBA line down the whole time at Indiana, and I had it down at Marquette as well for spacing purposes, not necessarily just to shoot from behind the NBA line, but because of the spacing. And we even added a 4-point line since I got here. I got the idea from Brett Brown, who had it at Philadelphia, and his was 30 foot, 8 inches. We put it ours to 33 for the spacing and for the downhill driving purposes. I was really surprised that I didn't see very many NBA lines down in practice gyms. And I think it's not about the shooting. It's about the spacing. Well, I think what happens right now is the footwork has not all made the jump, right? Like, you've got to really be able to step into your shot. You've got to be comfortable playing from a deeper area. You know, you've got to be able to lateral dribble if you want that three. You've got to be able to half circle the line. You know, I think those are the kind of things that's just going to take time for guys. And then it's really going to transfer back into the high school areas. Are kids going to continue to work on not only form shooting, but the footwork that goes into the range shooting? Because footwork and moving without the ball are two of the greatest weaknesses that the majority of guys are going to have when they get into college that I've seen. And, you know, we're still working on guys. I mean, we still work all the time on Anthony Edwards catching the ball in an aggressive way, right? Not letting the ball come into his body, but catching it in an aggressive way so he can go up into a shot, so he can get the ball out in front. So I think it's more the fundamentals that guys don't have just yet more than it is the line. And then it plays into that. It plays into not being in a proper way, not being in properly spaced, and not having the proper footwork at times to be able to knock that down.
Coach, that's great stuff. I knew it would be. Good luck tonight, my man. Keep it rolling.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.